step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Texas Card House. Here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in.
Welcome into the show. We remain at Texas Card House. I think John just sat down, either to play or maybe just shook some hands. But, you know, the man loves his cards, so it's a big day for him. Of course, the PGA Championship, so there's golf there. It does say something about Texas Card House that they took precedent over his love of golf. Didn't even mention it once, so I thank Texas Card House for that. Of course, we're going to be at East River 9 tomorrow, so a lot of the golf talk will begin. If you were looking for John updates on the PGA Championship, the big story, other than, you know, another Astros win, we'll get to that. A guy you never heard of until a couple of days ago started from the Space Cowboys, Colton Gordon. We'll talk about what he did and what Dubon and Pena combined for in a couple innings to get the Astros the win. But we had the schedule release, and Sean kind of ruined it for me yesterday. I was very excited thinking about the Texan schedule until Sean did his thing on Google, and found, or at least on Twitter, and found out that the Texans were going to play the Rams. And after that, I was done for. I knew week one, I didn't care after that, because much like the players and the coaches, I'm all about one game at a time, even when it is the schedule. And that's my way of saying I couldn't work up the care, honestly. I know it's a big deal. We will certainly talk about it. We won't go through all 17 games and make predictions, because none of that takes into account what could be injuries and other things. Who knows who's going to be on the team when the season begins? But the Texans released theirs to middling results, or middling response. If you look at how people took note of their schedule release, the one that made the most noise beyond the Chargers, because they've solidified their spot at the top of the schedule release game, it was what happened with the Colts. And the story on ESPN today is that the Colts have had to apologize. If you don't know why, they were trying to capitalize off of the Minecraft sensation. I'm never going to watch that movie. No interest in it, but it's a big movie. Got to acknowledge that. A lot of people have seen it. So the Colts went on Minecraft with their scheduled release and did a couple things. They had Patrick Mahomes. Well, Patrick Mahomes as a frog refereeing a fight, at least trying to stop a fight between John Rocker and Pat Mahomes, Patrick Mahomes' dad. If you don't know that story, they were in, was it New Orleans? And drinks were being had, and they were in the street. And I think John Rocker was messing with Mahomes Sr., and Sr. didn't like it. And they almost got into an altercation. So they did that in Minecraft. They had Kyler Murray riding a chicken in it. And the one that got them in the most trouble and caused them to delete their video was a Minecraft dolphin with a Tyreek Hill jersey on being detained by the Coast Guard. So because of Tyreek Hill's issues, it sparked some controversy, and it led to an apology. The Colts have apologized to Tyreek Hill for their now-deleted video, but once you put it out there, people grabbed it, so enough people have seen it. But who they also apologized to was Microsoft. This is the statement, or at least part of it, from the Colts. We've removed our scheduled release video because it exceeded our rights with Microsoft and included an insensitive clip involving Dolphins wide receiver Tyreek Hill. We sincerely apologize to Microsoft and Tyreek. So Microsoft got the first mention in the apology. Business partners, I get it. Tyreek's just a player for the opposing team. So what do we offend him? I was talking to Sean before the break. I mean, before we started the show. Of all the people who we probably shouldn't care if we offend, it's Tyreek Hill. Like, if Tyreek Hill's getting disrespected, maybe the whole, hey, we want to be cordial to everyone thing applies. But if there's one player in the NFL who may be in line for some disrespect, And, hey, if you want to make a little fun of his off-the-field stuff, you're more than welcome to. So Microsoft and Tyreek get an apology for the video. I think we have reached a point of maybe we've gone too far. Maybe we've gone too far with the schedule release. Maybe we just simply put them out there. Just, hey, throw the graphic out there. Maybe have a player or at least a couple of them announce the games. But if we are at a point where we're apologizing to Tyreek Hill for a Minecraft version of him being detained by the Coast Guard, maybe we've gone too far. And when I was thinking about this, I was trying to figure out what's the appropriate level of excitement because I don't care that much, honestly. The games are the games. I'm happy that we got football in September. But as far as schedules in May, not that big of an interest. So I was trying to rank the levels of excitement. So you help me out with this, Sean. What if you go to McDonald's and get the good fries? Like the ones that are hot and salted? Because you never know sometimes. McDonald's makes a good fry. But you could get the ones that have been sitting in there under the lights for a while. Yeah. And you can tell. You can tell they're not crispy. You can tell they're not hot. They may have salt on them, but not the best ones. Would you rank that above your excitement of schedule release day? Getting the good fries from McDonald's?
Getting the good fries?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. That's a baseline for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, pretty easy.
Now, this one probably wouldn't work for you because you work at a radio station. But what about when you were a kid and you went to some event and your favorite radio station was there and they handed out a free T-shirt? More excited for the free T-shirt or any free T-shirt?
Yeah.
T-shirt. Doesn't have to be a radio
yeah.
station T-shirt.
At like
any
a Rockets game or something? Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on.
If you caught a shirt from the T-shirt gun or schedule release day?
T-shirt gun.
Okay.
High-fiving Junction Jack at an Astros game when I was six. Higher than
meeting,
schedule release.
Going, we talked a lot about the parks in Orlando yesterday. Meeting Mickey Mouse. Even as an adult.
Today, 29-year-old.
Yes. Yes. More excited for that or schedule release day?
That one's close because right now I can't say I'd be
that excited
super
about Mickey
psyched
Mouse.
About
Is there a grown man or woman in a suit at Disney that you would be excited about more than schedule release day?
No,
like
probably
if you got to meet Gaston or
no.
Belle, no, none of those people because they don't even wear suits; they just put on wigs and
a
little
person.
Makeup.
That's yeah, just a
random ass person you could have met at Bucky's. Same thing.
And I would be trying to get them to break character, and they wouldn't because they're well trained.
Yeah, the Disney, I forgot what they're called exactly.
Characters.
Characters. They aren't allowed to. It's part of the gig.
Maybe if I met Aladdin. Aladdin would be cool.
I don't know. Jasmine, I think, for me. We will see.
All right.
Depends on the version of Jasmine I'm seeing. I want a proper representation of Jasmine.
I think getting my schedule, like the schedule that Joe sends out every week,
is more exciting.
And
seeing you don't have to work an extra couple hours.
Yes, or like next week, seeing that I'm off for 2 days, that is more exciting. I am more excited about that.
Okay, so
something
I guess,
already knew, just like the schedule release, where hey, guess what? They play the Colts and Titans and Jags twice. Cool,
but it's confirmed.
Yeah, once in week three.
That your request has been put in and acknowledged, and you know.
Exactly.
You don't have to come
and
in.
And it just reminds me of like, oh, yeah.
I got a couple days off. That's cool.
Thursday, I'm not doing anything.
What about a 7-day free trial from a streaming service that you can take advantage of? More exciting than scheduled release day?
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay, and the final one, which I think is going to be a clear win, finding a random $20 bill.
Oh, yeah.
Guilt-free.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
I think you have to go down to like $1 before it's
spit on it and like whatever.
No. I still pick it up. Just like the schedule release. Like I still looked at the schedule. Now I didn't watch the video until it was sent to me, just because I was like, I literally went to the Texans Twitter page and just scrolled past it to find the like, here's all the graphics lined up, because that to me is an easier way of. Seeing the information of
having to sit through the video.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where they show it for a quarter second of like, oh, okay. Or they have Bun B yelling at me, or not yelling at me, but yelling at people on the phone.
Sure. Yeah. I just appreciate you want to put in a graphic so I know home and away. I'm good.
That's all I need. But note, take off preseason. I don't care about the preseason game.
Get
out of here.
Give me the 17 games that matter. And we can go from there. We will tell you if you missed it, if the Texans get primetime games and how many and who they're against. But other than that, we kind of gave you the first 3 weeks yesterday.
Yeah.
It is because Sean
we broke the news.
Yeah, we broke the news on ESPN 97.5 that the Texans will begin with the Rams, host the Bucs, and then head to the Jags. That's their first three games, so two trips to the state of Florida, which led to our what would you do in Jacksonville besides going to a game. There's no reason to just go to Jacksonville and watch the Texans. You have to have a separate part of the trip planned. And we figured become a Disney adult or something or wind up at Universal. So, and Art was disappointed with us because I didn't use the term park hopper, because apparently that's the term you use when you go from park to park. I was unaware. That's on me. So we will get through some of the Texans, I guess you would say, premier games, the ones that may mean more to you than others because they're in prime time or against a rival, whatever it might be. We'll get into that. We'll also talk about the NBA. We'll do our what it should probably be called is a playoff risers, but I like the term beat the slander or beat the allegations. The guys who have been slandered for their play or maybe because they're simply disliked and have shown themselves to be guys who perform in the playoffs. We'll get into that. Also, Raheel Ramzanali will join us at 11:15. He'll tell you what's good to focus on in the city of Houston. He is the host of CityCast. He joins us typically Thursdays at 11:15. He texted me this morning, so we'll get him on at 11:15 to talk about that. And we'll take your calls as well, 713-780-3776. So we've got the NBA playoffs to get into. The Celtics keep their season alive. The Warriors do not. So a lot to get to, including the Astros, Texan stuff, and Todd Kallas breaking some news that the Astros have yet to confirm. But on the broadcast last night, he let us know that an Astros starter is likely out for the year. So a lot to get to. We're just getting started here at Texas Card House. We will be back.
ESPN 97.5.
Kane is in the building.
Now back to the Veritex Community Bank Studios with Del Olalea.
Welcome back. Don't think I didn't notice that there's no Texas Card House mentioned in my rejoin. All right, Michael. We'll talk about
it
tomorrow.
That's on me. Okay. I just didn't have the special rejoins on.
Got it. So, of course, think about blaming Michael for that.
Tap on the chest.
All right. That's on you. Yeah. I love when guys do that. Yeah. Everyone saw you screwed that up. Appreciate your acknowledging that. But if Sean doesn't tell me, I'm just going to blame Michael. So I do take account of his accountability. All right, a couple things. If you are a jersey wearer and you want to synchronize your jersey with the Texans' special jersey days, typically their first home game is the whiteout game, and that's happening again. It's week two against the Bucks. If you want to wear your white jersey, it's there for you. Battle Red is against the Bills in Week 12. And then if you did buy that H-Town jersey, got excited about it, that'll be Week 8 against the 49ers. So those are a couple of the special days for the Texans. And you know when they're going to wear the all-whites and the Battle Red and of course, H-Town. Okay, Texans schedule. We won't do a week-by-week thing. I almost think it's kind of pointless at this point. There's plenty of time between now and when your team is finalized. Could a trade happen? Could a surprise release happen? Injuries, all those play a part. So I will step away from making a schedule prediction. But we can talk about the team who actually is playing right now, and it's the Astros. And Todd Kallas, in the middle of the broadcast yesterday, gave us some news that maybe the Astros wanted to release themselves. Who knows? But the news came down earlier this week that Hayden Wesneski was dealing with arm issues and he was going to go on the IL. Well, here's Todd Kallas last night kind of talking about the extent of that injury.
Big seasons out of both Spencer Arrighetti and Hayden Wesneski.
Yeah.
Arrighetti can still fulfill that as he is slowly coming back from his injury. He is not obviously going to be out for the season, but Hayden Wesneski is likely to be out for the season. We'll find out more as we go along. But
yeah, that's too bad. I miss him.
Spencer's a big part of things.
Look, Todd Kallas was like, what did I say? likely out for the season. But it feels like Todd would know some things, certainly around the team. So that's the first word we heard, that one of the Astros, and at this point he was one of the replacements, one of the replacement starting pitchers who came over in the Kyle Tucker trade, won't be available the rest of the way. And, of course, they hope for Aaron Gaddy's return. He had the fluke injury when a batted ball hit him on his pitching hand. So that one seems like as soon as the bone heals, the hand heals, and he can do some rehab stuff, he will be back. But as far as Wesneski, that's disappointing. He's a hometown guy. There was a lot was made of him being able to pitch for the hometown team, and it just didn't work out. That's unfortunate. And it's been a consistent theme with the Astros that arm issues continue to plague their starters, which is it's not simply centralized to the starters, but it feels like all starters suffer from this. I'm sure I can go into injury problems over the course of the last 5 or 6 years, but it always feels like it hits a starter, someone you're counting on, and luckily they've been able to overcome, which speaks to the depth of their pitching staff and the way they've been able to kind of get around their injury issues. But at some point, you're going to lose that depth, whether because guys move on, like Urquidy and Verlander, or guys simply don't come back. And that's more in the Javier and Luis Garcia mold. And, of course, Lance McCullers is finally back, and we're still trying to see what Lance will be. So as it stands right now, you've got obviously your top two in Brown and Fromber, Ronel Blanco, who is beginning to pitch better. You hope he stays healthy. And then Lance. And then you're dealing with Ryan Gusto as your fifth guy, and then maybe you get a guy like Colton Gordon who pitched last night and kept this team in the game. That's all you can ask for. I was watching the highlights back today, and they flashed his family, and they were very excited. When he got out of the first inning, he gave up a triple that he worked around. So all in all, for at the time, the leader in ERA in the PCL, they brought him up from the Space Cowboys. He got his start, and when it's a spot start like that, that's all you want from them, to keep the team in the game and let them have a chance to fight back. And they're down early, but they came back. And credit to Dubon and Pena, because they did this a couple times where Dubon would get on and Pena would drive them in, and that resulted in the winning margin. They win the game 4-3. Hader got in a little bit of trouble. He walked a guy with two outs and then the stolen base, but he got a fly out to Jake Myers. Jake Myers came in, a routine play to get the win. And Jeremy Pena continues to hit. He went 4-for-4 last night, including the two RBIs, driving in Dubon in the 6th and the 8th inning. And then, of course, Paredes hit another home run to the Crawford Boxers. So the Astros win a couple in a row against the Royals. They take that series and go, now they're 22-20. And nice to get a series win over a good pitching team. The Royals aren't a good hitting team, and they showcase that in the final couple games of the series. But when you're pitching, takes a hit like Wesneski, and then we have McCullers start, obviously stretching back to the weekend. It's nice to get a bounce back and get good pitching performances from your guys. Of course, the only blip in the series with Gusto, who, as your fifth starter, is going to be a guy you're going to have those type of outings right now. But he's not had a bad year, so they'll be able to scrap and claw, and they'll be a team, I think, that is right around this range where we're always wanting more, and sometimes they're going to drop a series that you don't like, and other times maybe they'll go on a long streak to kind of get themselves righted. But the division's very forgiving, so no matter what it is, if they're an 85-86 win team right now, as they're playing, they'll be in it. The Mariners and the A's and the rest are going to allow them to be in it. Just hope you can find some health someplace. I guess it would begin with Aaron Gaddy coming back when he can. But there it is. It's Todd Callis kind of revealing that Wesneski is going to be done for the year. I wonder if the Astros go, hey, Todd, one message. We like to put that in a press release and a graphic that winds up on social media. That news generally does not come from the play-by-play man, but it happened last night. There is one thing I did want to get to, because while the Astros have had good pitching and the hitting while picking up with Pena and Paredes, it's been up and down, the defense has been solid. And they wanted to be better defensively. It's one of the reasons they moved Altuve to left. They thought that would certainly help their defense. And some of the numbers, we'll hear from Espada on it here. But some of their numbers, going into last night, they had the fewest errors in Major League Baseball. Errors per game, they're number three. And runs prevented, best in the AL. So they've been getting it done defensively. And that was a main focal point of this year, because they're probably going to have to win a little bit differently. You know, Espada talked about their approach at the plate had to change this year, and that's been to middling results. They also needed to find ways, particularly if their pitching and hitting was going to have some ups and downs, to keep runs off the board, and they've done it with defense. Here's Joe Espada on the improvement defensively for the Astros this year.
Outstanding. I think that's been a highlight of our season. We take pride on our defense, and we spend a lot of time making sure that we cover all the fundamentals. So we have played some really, really tremendous good defense. I got to give credit to our coaches. We made some coaching staff. You know, we're trying to bring Parachica to take over with the infielders. I think he's done a really good job developing some relationships and highlighting some things that I thought we could be better at, and he's done a really good job. Jason Bell and Dave Clark with the outfielders, developing two young outfielders in the corners, that's not easy to do. And we are also blessed with having some really good athletes. We have some really good players that care about defense, and we have been defense has been a priority for us since I got here in 18.
Jake Myers made a good play in center last night, and the young outfielders, the reference to Cam Smith and DeCenzo. You know, they've got a new infield for the most part. When Altuve's not playing second, you've got the two new corner infielders in Walker and Paredes. And Paredes is the surprise, I would imagine, because we're coming off a gold glove season from Bregman. And while he has been really good in Boston, we talked about the story about how he has kind of transformed or at least gotten off to a better start, and he attributes that to several things. Some of that has to do with the Boston hitting coach. He's finding some things from his swing or in his swing that were missed. The question about Paredes was, beyond how he would take advantage of the Crawford boxes, was how could he replace Bregman at third base playing defense? And there's been little, if any, drop-off there. So credit to the coaches that you heard Espada run down as guys who have helped help this infield become better. And, of course, Pena's been great on defense, and you match that with what he's done at the plate, and you're talking about a guy who, at this point, is the team's MVP. And he's shown that type of talent in spurts, if you think back to 2022, in the postseason. Nice to see him do that through the first 40-plus games or so at the plate and in the field. Okay, we'll go to break with that. We'll come back with what happened in the NBA last night as the Celtics keep their season alive and the Warriors do not. So we'll get to that. If you want to get in, you can. 713-780-3776. I am out at Texas Card House till noon. And we'll have more Astro stuff, because there is a, I guess you have to now call him a one-year wonder, who no longer is with the team. We'll get into that a little bit later. More NFL, more NBA when we get back.
ESPN 97.5.
Listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Texas Card House. Here's Del Olalea.
Last night in the NBA, we had the Celtics extend that series in a game they had to win. Beyond the simple, okay, if you lose, you're eliminated and your season is over, that team in that situation at home can't lose in five to the Knicks. Because if they don't make any moves, that's a team that they're going to have going forward. I think moves will be made just to lessen the burden on, at least the financial burden on the new owners. But when you look at the team overall, now Porzingis offered them nothing, and it led to the annoying phrase, the Luke Kornet game. Like, Luke Kornet had seven blocks, was a factor in the paint against the Knicks and helped the Celtics pull away. So now Celtics fans can utter that phrase and it'll mean something to them, which is disappointing, honestly. But overall, I expected it. The Knicks kept it close for a little bit until the Celtics got going. The three started falling, and they ran away with it. Derek White, who I think, if the Celtics are going to make a move to lessen salary, is a guy the Rockets should be paying attention to add to their backcourt if it's possible. But while he is still a Celtic, he is probably undervalued considering you do have Tatum and Brown, so his role isn't as big as it could be someplace else. And he was a star of the night. Jaylen Brown played well in a game he really needed after what has been a not great series for him. And they win that game. I do expect them to go down in six, but taking game five made sense. If we watch NBA basketball and NBA playoff series, this is generally how that goes. The favorite, once you get back home, goes and takes that series, unless your name's the Cleveland Cavs. But kind of the way, honestly, the series has gone, except when the Knicks are coming back in Boston. The Celtics have dominated the Knicks in Boston, and it went that way again. The Knicks have probably played one good full game in this series. They've had quarters where they've made Boston revert back to some of their problems, and those problems have existed kind of throughout the Tatum Brown tenure of bad offense on the floor, for getting stagnant, and the credit to the Knicks for taking advantage of it and winning the two games of Boston. But you give them credit fully for what they did in Game 4 after getting their doors blown off in Game 3. But Game 5 has kind of gone the way the series has gone. The Celtics get up big. They were just able to not allow the Knicks to come back and win. So that series is tied at 3. The Knicks are up 3-2. We'll see if they get Game 6 and end it. As far as the Warriors and the Wolves, that one went the way I expected. The Wolves turned the ball over so much, you kind of don't know what they can be, because they're sloppy with the ball. Ant has had his issues. I think he turned the ball over 7 times last night, did have 12 assists. He's kind of a remarkable player when you look at him, because he's, you think, athletic, can get to the rim anytime he wants. But his game, his footwork is kind of special, man. You'll watch him in the paint. He'll take that Euro step, and then he takes another step. He always has that one counter for guys, and he rarely runs into guys. He rarely gets called for charges in the lane. He's just a pretty special athlete. And, of course, when the three ball goes down, he's kind of unguardable. But Julius Randle's been the star of that series, mostly because you did not know what to expect from him. If you go back to his Knicks days, some of those playoff series could be rough. His inefficiency, his willingness to take the long twos have always been concerns for people when they're trying to gauge how good of a player Julius Randle can be. He'll have an all-NBA year 1 year, then he'll revert back to the guy who got traded by the Pelicans and the Lakers. But in that series, he got pretty much whatever he wanted. Draymond was going to defend him in a certain way. He was going to give up the jumpers, and when Julius Randle will hit a three, it makes it very tough. And he got into the lane when everyone. He played bully ball with Draymond. If it wasn't Draymond, there was no Warrior who could handle him. And they go down. And the question for the Warriors will be, how do you reconcile what you were for most of the Jimmy Butler, Steph Curry pairing with what you saw from Butler when Steph wasn't out? I heard Steve Kerr talk about how he thought they had a shot to win a title with Steph. Now, if you go by what their regular season was at the end, I mean, he may be justified. I don't buy it. I don't think that team had enough juice to win a title. And he also said that Butler, if he was playing in the regular season, would still be out. He wouldn't have come back. And maybe that's the reason he looked like a shell of himself. I mean, he was fine in Game 3. I just think that's an older player who doesn't have the ability to be great night after night. And that's something they're going to have to deal with. They're paying him nearly $110 million over the next two seasons. It's right around there, 54, 55 or so each year. So how does that team go about it? Draymond's due for an extension, so I'll ask you, Sean. Draymond can get an extension that syncs up with, I believe, Steph and Butler's end with the Warriors. If they give it to him, which would be one of those, hey, we want you to spend your entire career in a Warriors uniform. Klay, not so much. We have to make a decision, but Draymond, we would do that. Do you have any fear of that Warriors team after watching them for 7 games, nearly fully healthy against the Rockets? I think Jimmy missed the game, and what they showed against the Wolves as a real threat. Because I've heard people say they're going to be really good. I think they're going to be a 5-6 through 9 team, like maybe battling for the 5 or 6, but also could be a potential playing team because of the age and how many games is your second best player going to play. And Steph, I guess is he going to be a LeBron type who can still play 70 games at his age? Where do you think they stand right now?
Yeah, I think that they'll be a playoff team next year, assuming they run it back or, you know, run it close to back as much as you can. But I agree that, like, just how this works is that when your best players start getting to 37, 36, 35 years old, every year they are worse. Like, that this was the best, probably going to be the best version of this team. Maybe if you want to say that they can get some continuity with the whole season playing together, they're young guys that they keep. Shout out to Jonathan Kuminga, not you. But if those guys can play a little bit better, then maybe they can get better on the margins. But like you said, like, this was a team that was in a fight with the Rockets team that doesn't seem very close, or doesn't, you know, you watch these other teams and you're like, oh, that's what it looks like when a team has the best player that can really grab a game by the horns. And the Rockets just didn't have that, and they still almost came back to beat this Warriors team. So, yeah, I think they're a playoff team. I think that if you want to just keep Steph Curry around, like, you just re-sign, you just build around this older core with re-signing Draymond to sync them all up, and yeah, you just give it a run. But as far as title contention, like, nah, they're not a title contender next year.
Yeah,
they weren't really one this year. What are we talking about?
Yeah, as much as how good they were when they were on that run to get into a spot late in the season, they still were a playing team. I mean, as good as they played, and the West was great, and it was going to be tough, and a lot of their positioning had to do with them losing a couple games late. Shout out to Harrison Barnes for his three.
Yeah, but don't lose those games. Like,
yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, they did lose them. They did lose them. Now, they were much better with Jimmy Butler, but they did lose important games. And can this Warriors team at that age go full tilt like they were in the back half of the season over the course of the year? I'm going to say no. I don't think it's something they would even try to do. So are they good enough to manage their way into a 5 or 6, or are they going to be in the same spot they have generally been in over the course of the last 5 years outside of the 2022 team, which was a firm playoff team and then went on to win the title? They're going to be fighting for the play-in. And if the West goes the way people are suggesting because of potential trades, and if they're not in on one of them, I don't think the job gets any easier for them. So as crazy it is to say, I think this run, this chance was their last best, because the West was a little unsettled. We see Denver pushing OKC. If they could have gotten a healthy Steph for the rest of the playoffs, who knows? And that was, that's probably Steve Kerr and Steph's lament, that we had a real shot this year. I don't think that shot gets better next year. I think it actually gets worse, even with all the continuity, which I acknowledge could help them in some regard. Unless Pods becomes a real dude they can count on night after night, and maybe they sign and trade Kuminga for somebody. I think the best of what the Warriors can be is what we saw, when they struggled to put the Rockets away.
Yeah, that's
in seven.
That's like the crux of it. It's like, if we're going to sit here and say that the Rockets need to make big moves to make the next step, then the team that barely beat them in seven games, that's a bunch of guys in their mid to late 30s, they also need to make a step to be a real title contender.
Yeah, when you beat the Rockets by guile and smarts, you're not going to run into a team led by 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds over the course of an entire playoff run. You're not going to that isn't going to be your opponent, and you're just going to get older, as you mentioned, and probably less talented as age saps that from you. I was listening to a show, and they were consistently calling Jimmy Butler not playoff Jimmy, but pump fake Jimmy, because that's the only way he could get to the foul line or get his shot off. And that was a thing in this series, and it was somewhat of a thing in the Rockets series as well. Okay, so that was the NBA last night, and that'll lead us into our – we'll do it quickly in the next segment because we're up against it a little bit as I keep talking. We'll do our playoff risers, the guys who have beat the slander. I mentioned a couple of them by name. We'll see if we have any other guys as we're getting very close We have two teams in the conference finals. We're looking to see if, who the other two will be with the OKC Thunder and the Nuggets. That series going to Game 6, and, of course, it's Knicks-Celtics Game 6 as well. So a couple things to get to before we get to Raheel. He'll join us at 11:15. I am at Texas Card House for the next about hour, 10 minutes or so. We will be here till noon, and then Paul Gallant, and then the Killer Bees after him. We will be back.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 in HD, 97.9 HD2.
The Del Olalea Show continues
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Texas Card House. Here's Del Olalea.
Hey, number 10. And number 10 and go to state, if you can hear me, do some.
Get it, man.
Dwayne Wade is every Warrior fan watching that game. That's Dwayne Wade on playback. He and Jimmy are friends. They spent time together in Chicago. Some people credit Dwayne Wade for getting Jimmy Butler to Miami. But just like anyone who was watching the game and had any hopes that Jimmy Butler was going to do something to save the Warriors, Dwayne feels just like you. Didn't happen. The Warriors are out. So Jimmy Butler was not a playoff riser, but a guy in that series that was Julius Randle. Julius Randle is a guy who has made himself a lot of money, whether it comes from the Wolves or someone else. He is a guy who got off to a slow start with the Wolves, averaging just under 19 points, shot the ball from the field well, about 49%. But his numbers have gone up in these playoffs, and particularly in this series, right after the Game 1 loss that they had. The Warriors are coming off the Game 7 win over the Rockets, and they went into Minnesota in Game 1 and beat them. That's the game that Steph Curry got hurt. He wasn't great in that one. Neither were any of the other Wolves. But since that point, 24 points, 24 points, and then 31 and 29 in Games 4 and 5. So Randle, a guy who a lot of people questioned, why would they trade Cat for him? And beyond the money reasons, not a lot of people saw the value in bringing him and DiVincenzo in when you had Cat with Anthony Edwards and Gobert, and they made the conference finals. Well, Julius Randle's shown himself to be, at least for this postseason, a riser. And it kind of flies in the face of conventional thinking. He is a bigger power forward who tries to be physical, and he doesn't mind taking long mid-range twos. It's worked out for him, at least against the Warriors and in their previous series. So Julius Randle, got to give that man a lot of credit. A guy who, if he keeps going this way, it will change the narrative on him. I don't think anyone's going to say playoff Julius, but he's a guy who probably deserves a little bit more respect after what he's done so far. And, of course, I think the guy at the top of the list is a guy we've talked about a little bit. And mostly he got talked about because of his dad. But Tyrese Haliburton has been special. He's a very good player, maybe even great. He has just played with the Kings and the Pacers, and people were questioning him in this team, and they got off to a bad start too. They were a team coming off a conference finals appearance that didn't start well, but once he got going, once he got over, I guess you want to call it the Olympic hangover, where he didn't play, and you know, he funnily tweeted that he's like the kid who didn't do anything on a class project and got an A when he got his gold medal. He's been the Pacers' best player, and maybe if we just look at the teams who still remain, would you say he's had the best playoff so far, Sean?
Of the players that remain?
Yes.
In the East?
Let's go overall.
I think Jokic is still better.
Okay.
Got at least one 40-20 on his resume.
He's got a couple 40-point games.
Yeah.
So Jokic
and
almost,
Tyrese Haliburton did throw up a four spot in
that's true.
In game game three?
True, and Jokic did shoot the ball poorly in game four against the Thunder. He didn't shoot the ball very well. I was never going to say he's the reason they lost, but he was a guy in a game where they could have a game they've taken a 3-1 lead, didn't shoot the ball particularly well. But yeah, I think Jokic
I think Jokic
can maintain that top spot.
Yes, especially when you like great on the curve of, like, he's doing, like, the defenses that he's doing this against versus Tyrese Haliburton is doing it against the Cavs, sure, but then, like, the Bucks in the first round was kind of just like a dead team walking. So I'm not trying to, you know, I'm not overrating that or whatever, but there's one guy still. In the East, I think he has a case. That's why I asked to clarify, because in the East, I think he has a pretty slam dunk case. The only guy I could think of that comes close or that, you know, passes him is Jokic. I mean, Shea, he wasn't really asked to do much, but he didn't really do much in the Grizzlies Thunder series.
You're right. Didn't have to. I will say this. I start to look at Tyrese Haliburton's numbers, and maybe this is more about moments than anything else, because he's pretty much the same guy in the postseason and the regular season. He has just had big moments, like he knocked down three after three to get them back in the game.
He made two game winners
against the Cavs in game five, and then of course the two game winners, the one that eliminated the Bucks, and then the one that beat the Cavs.
Game two.
So yeah, he's got moments.
The meltdown.
Yeah, where they were out without all their guys and still had a lead and then blew it. So yeah, it's not a bad called to throw Jokic in there as far as the best player this postseason. I guess maybe my judgment was clouded by the fact that his team is down, but that hardly has much to do with him and more to do with the fact that when he has no outlets, he's got to throw the ball to Russell Westbrook and pray. So
yeah.
If Russell Westbrook would knock down a couple more shots, maybe I would have put Jokic at number one.
But the turnaround three that he made.
That
alone, you're just like, come on, dude.
We talked about it yesterday. It was yesterday where I said, the feeling of watching him knock down that three was in complete opposition of watching Russell Westbrook miss wide open jumpers from three, where he not just miss, he's missing them by 3 feet. And then you make the comparison to Jokic and that three that at the moment kept the Nuggets alive in that game.
And the best part is that they had to check. I forgot if they called the timeout.
They did the little swirly finger thing.
Yeah, checked to see
sure
if it was
a three.
And so you got, like, I don't know, an extra 2.5 minutes of doing OKC crowd shots, and they're all like
disbelief.
They're all doing the hands on their heads.
Surrender Cobra.
Yeah, just different versions of, like, WTF was that?
Because they were rolling. They finally had gotten over the hump to take the lead,
and
they feel like the place is going nuts, and he knocks down that three.
You can see it in real time, like watching the crowd behind the court, like, you know, on the sideline behind the court that you can see. And, like, you can just see, like, I don't know, like 100 different reactions. It's just like, damn.
Yeah. If they had gone on to win that game, I would have probably Sabruder filmed that three and just looked at the crowd shots. I love doing that when a guy knocks down a big shot on the road just to see all the crowd reactions. But, you know, they wound up being very happy about the end because the Nuggets were dead tired and could not. Turned out at some point you wear down. You cannot get out to shooters. From Jalen Williams knocked down a shot. And of course, I think we did talk about Jokic was in a drop. They let Shea walk into a three,
and
that helped them win the game. So, yeah, Jokic, I barely would call him a playoff riser just because I always think he's great. But if we're talking about, if we transition to best players in the playoffs so far, he should get on the list. I'm trying to think if there's anyone else besides Haliburton and Randle who have done something to help their resumes and the narrative surrounding them so far.
I think should Brunson get a little bit of a shout?
Even more, you think he's done more? I'm trying to think because he's already looked at as a dude.
That is true.
But he's had his moments. He did not play that well yesterday. No one did for the Knicks, so I'm not going to just put that all on him.
Does Mikal Bridges get the Knicks as far as, like,
it's
rising?
It's not a bad choice. It's not a bad choice because the five first-round pick thing was hanging over his head for a while. It was always going to be something brought up, and then he has been a key contributor to the first two wins in Boston, and then in game four, he was one that helped keep them going and steady when Jalen Brunson has his normal sit-down time at the start of the fourth. So, yeah, Mikal Bridges, he's got the steal they're both classified as steals because Tatum wasn't actually trying to shoot at that moment. So he's got the two game-ending steals in games one and two, and then what he did in game four. So, yeah, I'd throw him on the list.
And then to round out the list, Steven Adams for what he did in the first round.
I mean, if you go by Steven Adams' stats, he should be one.
Look at the net rating.
I have heard because I listen to an NBA podcast or two throughout the day. And, Steven Adams has been mentioned as a guy people should be looking at to add to their team. In fact, teams who are looking for a center and need a backup who's going to be impactful, it was a name. That's the first name being brought up for free agents. Now, of course, you might want to trade for Daniel Gafford or something. But Steven Adams, I think, has done a lot for his future earnings as well, beyond just what he did here and how people love him and want him to come back. And maybe the NBA world was reintroduced to Steven Adams, a guy who may have priced himself out of the Rockets range could be Steven Adams. I don't know if he's been here enough to give them a bit of a deal on it, but that's a guy who's done quite a bit. You're like, oh yeah, Steven Adams is alive and can play and can still help a winning team.
At the start of the year, we're just like, sure, whatever you get out of Steven Adams, however healthy he can stay. And it was like the backup center was him and Landale. Like, we just mentioned them together as like,
whichever. They're like one and the same, yeah.
Yeah, and now, like you said, he's, I mean, with how bad this free agent class is, he might be like a top 10 free agent.
For the value and the price, I wouldn't say you're wrong there. We'll see if Adams gets a massive. Well, that too. We'll see if Steven Adams gets a massive overpay. That'd be a pretty funny change in direction as far as where he has been as a player. Okay, we'll go to break with that as it looks like the camera died again, and I'll try to fix that before we're done for the day. I mentioned Derek White earlier. Well, there is a NBA reporter suggesting that the Rockets and Celtics could have a deal to be made if the Celtics are looking to cut salary. So we'll play that when we get back in the second hour, and then Raheel will join us right around 11:15. So 1 hour down here at Texas Card House. We'll get to hour two when we come back.
Listen to ESPN 97.5 and HD 97.9 HD2.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, rechalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
With Car Guru's Discover, you can skip the filters and describe what you're looking for in your own words. Simply type what you want, and Car Guru's Discover instantly surfaces real listings that match your exact needs. It's no wonder Car Guru's is the number one most visited car shopping site, according to SimilarWeb's estimated traffic data. Buy or sell your next car today with Car Guru's at CarGurus.com. Go to CarGurus.com to make sure your big deal is the best deal. That's CarGurus.com. CarGurus.com.